As usual, we are all gathered here today to listen to another exposition of the Lord Buddha's teaching. Before we commence today's sermon, let us all take a moment to remind ourselves of how extremely fortunate we are to be students of the great master, to be his disciples, to have him as our teacher, the perfect one, the most noble one, the infinitely victorious one, the most graceful one, the unvanquished one, the undefeated one, the infinitely merciful one. It is, of course, none other than the Supreme Gautama Buddha that we speak of. So before we commence today's sermon then, let us all be upstanding to recite the Dhira Savikata Mohasa stanzas, through which we pledge our allegiance to the Lord Buddha as his lifelong students. This is a promise that we make to ourselves, more than anyone else, to fulfill the path that he showed us, to offer to him the greatest gift that he would have expected of us, and that is to achieve the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, and having done so, having embarked on the path to do so, help and share this knowledge, this information with others, so that they may also reach their emancipation. You'll be happy to learn that I have today shared with you the next stanza of the 10 stanzas, and you will be able to see them on the screen in a moment. So let us be upstanding and recite these stanzas. Seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, observe the precepts, and then continue with today's proceedings. Dhirasya vigata mohasya pabhinna khilasya vijita vijayasya anighasya susam chittasya buddha silasya sadhu panyasya vesantarasya vimalasya Bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi akatankatissa tusitassa vantalokamisassa muditassa khatasamanassa manujassa antimasarirassa narassa anopamassa virajassa bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi asansayassa kulassa venaikassa saratevarassa anuttarassa Ruchira dhammasa nikhankhasa abhasakarasa manachidasa virasa bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi nisabhasa appameyasa Gambhiras monapattas khemankaras vedas dhammattas sanguttattas sangatigas muttas bhagavato tas savako hamasmi Nagas pantasenas kina sanyojanas muttas patimantakas dhonas pannadhajas vitaragas dantas nipapanchas Bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi. nagassa pantasenassa kīna sanyojanassa muttassa patimantakassa dhonassa pannadhajassa vitaragassa dantassa nippapanchassa bhagavato tassa savakohamasmi namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Please repeat all together and after me. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Saranagamanam sampunnam. Panatipata veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Adinnadana veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Kamesu micchachara veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Surameraya majjapama dattana veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Tisaranena saddhin panchasilam dhammam sadhukam surakkitam katva appamadena sampadeta. Okay, you may all now be seated. And also before we commence the sermon, let us all take a moment to fulfill our duty, and that is by inviting the many countless beings in the 10,000 world systems surrounding us, all the celestial beings, the divine beings, as well as those who may be unfortunate enough to have been born in the woeful plains, and today seek their liberation, seek their freedom, their emancipation. Let us not forget that each and every one of them will have been those who will have come to our help and support and assistance those who will have provided us with shelter, love, care, affection throughout our long journey in samsara. It is therefore our duty today to return that favor, to repay the debts that we owe them. And how better to repay the debts than by offering them the gift that excels all gifts, and that is the gift of the Dhamma. So as we are today, availed of this wonderful opportunity, the perfect gift that we have received from the Supremely Enlightened One, the Awakened One, let us take this moment to pass on that gift to those helpless and hopeless beings in samsara. Let us invite them to come along and witness this meritorious deed, as for some of them, it may be merits that they are lacking in order to move themselves one step closer to liberation. May they witness this meritorious deed and acquire merits, and may such merits help them to free themselves. And then there will be others who will be fortunate enough to be in the blissful plane, but who have yet to understand the teaching of the Buddha. Fulfill that understanding and achieve complete liberation. Let us invite them also to listen to the teaching of the great master, understand it, comprehend it, and free themselves once and for all from the endless suffering of samsara. So as I now make this invitation, I ask you all to extend that invitation in your hearts and in your minds. With boundless compassion and kindness, extend it out to all of them. Invite them to join us. Invite them to witness this meritorious deed. Invite them to listen to the teaching of the great master. And invite them all to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Samanta chakravalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam munirajasa sunantu saggamokkhadam dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta. Okay. And before we begin, let us also take a moment to remind ourselves that although we may be good, gentle, kind-hearted beings that we are today, in this long journey in samsara, we have not always been like this. We are who we are today thanks to the noble association and the good and noble friends that we have had the opportunity, the fortune to associate. But it is the case that in this long journey in samsara, we have not always had that privilege. As a matter of fact, our associations have virtually always been with ignoble, immoral people. Associations which defiled our minds with desire, aversion and delusion, and having been blinded with ignorance and attachment, we may have carried out many offenses, offended the noble ones, insulted them, disgraced them, reviled them, and desecrated them. The consequences of such actions may be that today, as we make efforts to understand the Dhamma, with their help, as a result of our insults towards them, although they extend their arms to help us, we are not in a situation to receive that kind and generous help. So therefore, before we commence today's sermon, let us take a moment to seek forgiveness for any misdeeds, wrongdoings, and perhaps the odd slip of the tongue, as a result of which today we have made it difficult for ourselves to achieve our liberation. So let us take a moment to seek forgiveness from the Noble Triple Gem, the Samma Sambuddhas, the Paccheka Buddhas, the Arahatta Buddhas, Anagami, Sakrudagami, Sotapannas, be they on the path or having attained the fruits, as well as the Buddhas, ministry to some of the Shasane, the Dhamma, as well as the Mahasangha, for any thoughts, words, or actions of insult, desecration, revile, offense, slander we might have directed towards them. And as you take a moment to seek that forgiveness, may I remind you to make a firm resolve to never conduct yourself in such manner ever again. And finally, let us make a firm resolve. May through the course of this sermon, I be able to fulfill the first noble attainment of Sotapanna by understanding the Four Noble Truths and free myself from the endless suffering of the four great hells once and for all. For those who may have already achieved that noble state, may through the course of this sermon, you be able to understand the Dhamma further, fulfill any gaps in your understanding, in your comprehension, achieve the subsequent stages and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Having made that firm resolve, I invite you all to prepare yourselves to listen to this sermon. It is our hope and our firm belief that day by day you continue to move from good to greatness. I like to think and I hope I'm right that gone are the days of wickedness, evilness. Gone are the days when you wouldn't think twice before offending someone, raising your voice, be that to your parents, teachers, or anyone else for that matter. Gone are the days, I hope, when you would retaliate, tit for tat, eye for an eye, an arm for an arm, a leg for a leg, a life for a life. Those days are gone. I hope. I like to think so. Only you will know the truth. I feel that you have, and I hope I'm right. So having shed that which is ugly, that which is disgusting, that which stinks, what is it that stinks? This is the evil stuff, the bad stuff, the defilements. Not just any old defilements. Attachment to good is also a defilement. But the attachment to the bad stuff. Things like greed, anger, hatred, malice, jealousy. Even those words have a certain ring to them, don't they? Don't those words sound like thorns pricking your ears? Jealousy, wickedness, vileness, malevolence. I'll hit you, I'll beat you, I'll kick you. There may be things that were said in the past, done in the past, and perhaps more recently thought only in the past, but not done or said. And maybe now, I'm sure, I hope, are not even thoughts that cross your mind. So now you are free from the bad stuff. Free from the nivaranas. The nivaranas are that which hinder your path in Nibbana. They are called the hindrances. They are hindrances because for as long as they exist on your path, there is no making progress. You can't move forward. Like an anchor to a ship. Like a chain. That goes around the neck of an animal. That is bound to a stump. Or the bark of a large tree. For as long as it's there, it's unable to move. Move forward so that it's able to make use of itself, make use of others, do good to the world and oneself. The hindrances will always hold you back. So, these hindrances I hope you have now shed aside. Limitless indulgence in sensuality. Blindness to sensuality. Blindness to sensual pleasures. Today I believe that even though it may be that you permit yourself to engage in or perhaps seek pleasure in certain sensual experiences, I like to think that the days are gone whereby you used to blindly indulge yourself in them, so much so that you used to intoxicate yourself in those sensual experiences. And you mustn't limit this sensual, when I say the word sensual experiences or sensuality, I know it goes very closely with another word which has an X instead of an N, but you mustn't mistake the two as the same. One is only part of the other. Sensuality includes that and a lot more. So one could intoxicate oneself in sensual indulgences, and that could be pleasing their eyes, ears, nose, tongue. As I say these things, examples of these things must come to mind. The person of the past. When you used to say, Marasa, Savako Hamasmi, I am a devout pupil, student, follower of Mara. That is what Mara stands for. He is the idol of sensual indulgence. Living in the foremost heaven, in the karma sphere, where it only takes a whim, a wish, a fancy. That's all it takes. All you need is to think you want something and then it's there. So tomorrow, who lives in that sort of world, the true suffering has escaped him. He is too blind to see the real truth. So when Mara says, how dare you say, Gotama, that this world is full of suffering? How dare you say, Gotama, that there is no pleasure to be found anywhere, no true pleasure to be found, no true happiness to be found? On one occasion, the Buddha picks up a grain of mud, holds it in his two fingers, in his forefingers, and he proclaims, if there is but this much pleasure in this world. Not anymore. If there was only this much pleasure in this world, in all worlds, in these 31 realms of existence, in this infinite and vast universe, which has no limits, this boundless universe, if there is but this much pleasure, holding a grain of sand, a grain of mud in his hand, he says, I would not have opened my mouth to speak. I would not have come into this world to preach. I would have remained quiet. It is only because there is not even as much as this amount of pleasure in this world that the Buddha is coming to this world and to help people realize the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of their suffering, how it can be ceased, and the path to it. Mara, however, is blind to this because he is intoxicated. When one is intoxicated, they can't see right from wrong. When one is intoxicated, they can't think straight. So when one can't think straight, how can they think right? How can they see the truth? So it may be that there was a time in your lives where you were in the army of Mara, not necessarily waging war against the Buddha. You didn't have any grudges with him, personally, per se. But you didn't see any problem with indulging in pleasure. I mean, even to this day, there are people who may as far as come to the monastery. They'll spend half a day here. They'll spend an afternoon. They'll observe the monks, the Anagarikas, and yourselves, the devotees who come into the monastery, listen to the sermons, sat in one place for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4, 5 hours at a stretch, listening to a sermon, sat down for 2, 3 hours at a stretch, cultivating your mind, working on your meditation. They'll observe you, and at the end of that, they'll go, what's wrong with these people? What's happened to them? They look like they've lost the will to live. What's wrong with them? Are they depressed? Is this some sort of mental asylum? Do they need help? People will feel like that. People will say like that. Of course, we have nothing against them. They only speak that which they know, that which they understand. They're only showcasing their ignorance. So, we only look at them with boundless pity and empathy. But it may be, reason I say this, it may be that you were among these people. Perhaps in this birth, perhaps in previous existences. I know of people like that. I know friends who used to be like that. I say used to because I don't know what happened to them. I had friends. I moved on. They probably moved on. Today I don't get to meet them. I don't get to see them. I don't know what's going on with their lives. Not that I'm complaining. But as much as I thought one day I should help these people, it seems that some friends I left behind, and left behind with a promise and with a hope that one day I'll be able to come back and help you. It just seems that some of these people, they have moved away from us so far out. It almost seems like, in a metaphorical sense, they've moved to another galaxy. Some of them seem so far out, so far away, Yet only a few months to a few years ago, they were very close. They were very close. Our paths were almost parallel, but it seemed they weren't really parallel. It only seemed parallel, but it wasn't in the end. At one bifurcation, they turned left and I would turn right. And then we bid farewell. Never seen them since. It is maybe that today they are still indulgent in the sensual desires, their fantasies, trying to achieve something that I know they will never achieve. But unfortunately, they don't know that. I say these words not to have pity. It's not just for that, but to also think about yourself. This would be your past. For, I wouldn't say a few of you, I'd even go as far as saying for quite a few of you. Maybe even most of you. I don't think I'm wrong to assume that you'll all come from very successful family backgrounds, reasonably affluent, well-to-do, have had the opportunity to travel the world, seen a lot of things, done a lot of things, experienced a lot of what the world has to offer, experienced a lot of things that for most other people would only be a dream. And when you got to experience them, weren't there moments in your life where you thought, this is life. This is the good life. I'm living my dream. This is what I want. This is what I always wanted. I'm sure there would have been moments. It may be when you were one day lying down on the beach somewhere, sipping on your cocktail, in your swimsuit, looking out into the beach, seeing the yachts sailing in the far horizon, perhaps. Maybe a bartender attending to you, to your every need. And then you conveniently forgot the fact that you have a bill to pay at the end of it, or that you had already paid the bill in full to be there in the first place. Right? When they were all simple conveniences that you chose to forget. Because that's the ugly side. We don't want to talk about that side. We don't want to look at that side of things. Weren't there moments in your life like that? I'm talking about moments where sensual pleasures come your way. It's not like you can stop them all of a sudden. They'll come your way. The hindrance is not for sensual pleasures to come your way, but rather when you allow them to intoxicate you, when you are unable to see the truth that lay behind the veil of ignorance, when you accept a sensual pleasure as a sensual pleasure, that is the most unfortunate thing. A simple example would be perhaps when you are eating something nice, maybe something savory, something sweet. As you're eating it, you can feel your tongue playing with the food inside your mouth, twisting it, turning it, bouncing it, thrusting it left, right. Right? And you know what's going on inside. This is the tongue trying to seek utmost pleasure. It couldn't have been only myself who, for instance, when served a plate of whatever, and there'd be something that I would find particularly nice. Right? You'd savor that. It couldn't have just been myself who's had that experience. I think we've all been in that boat. Are you telling me you've never had that experience? Where perhaps it's maybe a sausage. You're having your maybe rice with that. Right? You break off a part of that sausage. And that's all you allow yourself for this mouthful. Because you gotta ration it, right? For the rest of the meal. So you can't have it all at once. Because that's the thing that gets the rice inside of you. Do you not remember how that is the thing that kept you going? Even when everything else on your plate you thought was, I don't know, I don't feel, that doesn't look very appetizing. Weren't there days? There were days, plenty of days in my childhood where I looked at lunch and said, Amma, I'm not sure I want to eat that. And then she would say, right, let me go and get you something. And she'd bring back a sausage or some fried chicken or maybe a fish or something like that. Something would either come out of the freezer, something come out of the oven, something come out of the frying pan. And then all of a sudden, I was so focused on that thing which my mind accepted as being a reasonable compromise. I was prepared to let the rice go inside me for as long as I was allowed, my tongue was allowed to play with that delicious sausage. Is it only I who's had this experience? I doubt it. Sometimes it would be a bottle of pickle. There was no particular reason when it comes in terms of nourishment. I needed pickle with my food. But I remember whenever I had couscous, there always had to be pickle. Not any old pickle, it had to be garlic pickle. It was that pickle that got the couscous down me. This is indulgence. Not necessarily the bad stuff, as in that indulgence didn't hurt anybody. I didn't steal it from anyone. Didn't kill or steal or lie or do any of the unmeritorious deeds to acquire it. But nevertheless, that was an indulgence. It was an indulgence because during that experience, my mind was not doing what it had to do. My mind was not analyzing the situation. It was not looking at what was going through it. It did not want to do that. It didn't know how to, but I don't think it would have wanted to either. Because when the taste buds were excited, that is all I wanted. Indulgence in sensuality. I know some people who, for whom music is their entire life, their whole life is music. They'll wake up in the morning with their headphones in their ears. Yes, I didn't say they wake up and then put the headphones in their ears. They wake up with the headphones in their ears. So that tells you how they went to sleep the previous night. So they fell asleep with the music in their ears. They wake up with the music in their ears. And then they'll walk into the washroom. And then they'll take the music with them. In the washroom, they'll have a music system. And then once they're done with that, they'll move into the living room to sit down for their breakfast, and then again music in their ears. Like a monkey jumping from tree to tree. Without the tree, the monkey cannot move forward. So like a monkey jumping from tree to tree, it is the music that keeps them jumping moment to moment and to get them through the day. I know some people who will... Some people I've actually never seen without their headphones, their headset on. Not so much in Sri Lanka, but where I used to live. Some people, they... It's like sometimes you feel, is that how they came out of their mother's womb? With their headphones on. They seem to be... That seems to be an intricate, integrated part of their bodies. I'm not mocking or ridiculing anyone. I'm just saying sensual indulgence can come in various shapes and forms. And if we're not mindful, what we are compromising, what we are giving up in exchange is our Nibbana. Because wherever the five hindrances are playing their part, Nibbana has no part to play. Because what the five hindrances do is they hinder Nibbana. They're an obstacle to Nibbana. They keep one from achieving Nibbana. And I'm just talking about one for the time being. Indulgence in sensuality. Blindness. Intoxicated in sensuality. This is what is referred to as kamachanda. So blind that they don't see how pleasure comes into being. Now think about this. Today, from listening to the sermons, understanding the Dhamma, I don't think sensual pleasure can fool you. Correct me if I'm wrong. Today I doubt that sensual pleasures can trick you, can fool you. Today I feel, I believe, this is an assumption I'm making about you, but I think I'm basing it on solid facts. It's safe for me to make this assumption. Only you can correct me, if otherwise. Today I feel when you sense sensual pleasure, your ever alert mind, your vigilant mind, quickly comes out of hiding. So this is your sati, your mindfulness, comes out of hiding and perhaps even admonishes you, tells you off. How dare you? This is sensual pleasure you're experiencing. Do you not realize that this is simply a relief from vexation? Do you not realize what you have permitted yourself, what you have allowed yourself to experience? Doesn't your mind do that to you today? Tell me it doesn't. Come on. Does it not? When you sit down with that tub of ice cream. Okay, you don't sit down with tubs of ice cream anymore. Good. With that dessert cup of ice cream. Spoon in hand. On the sofa. What does your mind tell you now? As you lap it up. Spoon by spoon. Right, when that delicious vanilla rubs all over your tongue, when it starts to melt on the inside of your palate, and the cool and soothing cream, I know I'm wasted here, I should be on a TV advert, shouldn't I? When all that happens inside your mouth, does your mind not tell you off, as if you're doing something dirty? Remember how you got told off when you passed poop in your pants as a young kid, right? And not when you're really, really young, you couldn't really work out that, you know, you really didn't know what to do when you wanted to go to the toilet. But later on, when you realize that, you know, the toilet was an option, but an even easier option is to poop in my pants, and then mom can come and clean it up if she wants. Right? That time, remember when it happened, and your mother came and told you off, and admonished you and said, "What a dirty thing you did." Right? So similarly, does your mind not tell you off now when you indulge in sensuality? So when you're having that ice cream, is it not any longer a guilty pleasure? So the pleasure is still there. But previously, it used to be a welcome pleasure. You used to enjoy it more than you do now, don't you? Fools might say, "Tell me about it, Swami Nahasa. I used to enjoy my ice cream so much, and now thanks to you, I can't even enjoy an ice cream." You've ruined my life. Those days a simple ice cream could make me happy, but now not even an ice cream can make me happy. Only a fool would think that way. Because today you realize the true nature of pleasure. How it is a delusion. How it is a complete trickery of the mind. And your mind tells itself off because your mind doesn't like to be fooled. And your mind knows that pleasure is simply a relief from suffering, vexation. And your mind, of course, does not like to suffer, does not like to vex. But that doesn't stop it from experiencing pleasure. So this is where you have that conundrum. And you have your mind telling yourself off. Tell me, does it not happen to you? Going back to listening to the music, it may be that you used to spend your days listening to this FM, that FM, or maybe your favorite rock album. I know some young people, particularly some young people these days, they'll wake up to the music, they'll do their homework listening to music, they'll have their lunch listening to music, they'll shower listening to music, they go to the toilet listening to music, they'll listen to music listening to music, they'll, everything they have to do listening to music. And the music companies are doing their fair share to make sure that these young kids get to live a very fulfilling and satisfying life. Not just the music companies, but, you know, nowadays they have very advanced and high-tech audio gear, don't they? Like, you know, I remember when I first saw a pair of headphones. I think I was probably in grade 7 or something like that. When I first saw a pair of headphones, there were these little things. I think it was a pair of Sony headphones that I first saw, plugged to a Walkman. Yeah, they had things called Walkmans back then. So you used to have to put a cassette in it. And oftentimes the tape got stuck in it. And then you had to pull that thing out and wind it all back up again and stick it back in. And you had to change the batteries also. Yes, we used to have things called batteries. I'm talking to the young generation of today. We used to have things called batteries. And I remember those headphones were, you know, you would quite easily, you could lose them. And they always used to fall out of the ears. Such an annoyance they were. This was before they came in with those fancy new types of headphones where you can kind of stick it in your ear and it would stick, and it would have the, like now they have these belts sort of things, like they latch on to the ears, right, or the outer ear. But back then you'd have to stick it there and hammer it in for them to remain. One jerk of a movement and it would drop off. But back then it was a novelty, and if you rocked one of those, then you were a real someone. So that's back then. But look at today. If you just sit outside and take a walk down a path, like this promenade where people go for walks and maybe a run in the morning. Have you seen the size of those things these days? It's like they're carrying baby turtles on each ear. I'm not telling anyone off. I'm not saying that's bad to do. It's not good to do. I'm not talking about it could be damaging to the ear. I'm not talking about any of that stuff. Let the scientists worry about that. But what I'm saying is, think about what people expect today from this new high-tech, state-of-the-art, advanced headphones. Today you can't talk to a guy before checking whether they've got their headphones on. How many times at the work or maybe on public transport, right, somewhere, you want to talk to someone, you turn your head to talk to them, and you've got to say the same thing twice? And you say, excuse me? Right, and they're just nodding their head, not at you, they're just rocking to the music. And you say, excuse me? So now you have to wave at them. So the sense of hearing has become redundant, because you have to wave at them first now. And that's the way you get their attention. So then they have to turn down their music. Hold on. So then turn down the music, and then they'll take off their headphones and say, yes, can I help you? So by the time it's taken them to do that, it's too late for the message. Whatever it is you want to say, it's too late for that. I'm not mocking, not saying technology shouldn't advance. And it's not like if I say these things, then technology is going to stop advancing, or that people's interest in more and more new technologies and more advanced technologies and their desire to completely indulge themselves in these sensual fantasies is going to drop or fall one bit. So, I would be a fool to exhaust my breath talking for the cause of something that is never going to happen. But for those of you who are listening in, I'm asking you, did you not have a time like that? And I'm asking you, isn't that a pandemic in itself today? One that you have to save yourself from if you never fell into that trap. This is indulgence in sensuality. For as long as that indulgence in sensuality takes an important part of your life, Nibbana is but a dream. Because intoxication in sensuality is a hindrance, one of the five hindrances to Nibbana. That is again not to say that anyone who's got a headset on them is not going to attain Nibbana. Who am I to make that call? But what I can tell you is, whenever there is an indulgence in sensuality, and that has taken, that is at the forefront. For as long as indulgence in sensuality is the running theme of the mind, the words of the Dhamma has little effect on you. But I think, and I think I'm right in thinking this, this was your past, but today, that has changed a lot. Some of you have, who wrote in to talk about, to share their past with us and to talk about their future goals for the new year. Some of you wrote in and said it was used to be a habit of yours to play music in your vehicle, on your way to work, on your way to see friends, or whenever you set out, the music would come on, and usually it was quite loud. I've sometimes been in traffic, and sometimes I used to get scared. Like the first time this happened, I got really worried. What sounded like a war tank was approaching me, and I could hear, the sound of almost the sound of a war tank approaching me. Only when I looked outside, I saw a guy in a small car, his windows rolled up. But the sound of his music vibrated the entire body of the vehicle. You can't tell me you've never seen people do that. He's only got his windows rolled up because otherwise he'd get done for noise pollution. But in his own car, he's free to do what he wants, right? Including getting himself deaf. Think about it, right? If that sound can do so much to metal, what do you think it's doing to this poor guy's ears? The entire car is vibrating. The windows are rattling to the noise. And sometimes it used to be so loud that if the guy used pulled up right next to you, say you're stuck in some traffic, his windows are rolled up, your windows are rolled up, and to his music, my steering wheel vibrates. Imagine that. You never been there? I'm talking about indulgence in sensual pleasures. Indulgence. This is a form of intoxication. See, so intoxicated, they know enough to get themselves a driving license. But they, so you can't tell me they don't have the brain power to think what this noise is going to do to their ears. You can't tell me they can't think about that. But still, music is their life. Their music is their life. So they have to have their music. And going deaf is a small price to pay, it seems. The only bit they can't seem to figure out is once they've gone deaf, they won't be able to listen to the music anymore. Indulgence. Some of you may have been like that. But today, I'm not talking about car rocking music. Just playing simple, say You listen to a small piece of piano music or some melody that you really used to like. When you listen to that, when you hear that playing, even if it is in the background, maybe it wasn't you that played it, but you hear it coming from somewhere. And when you feel your mind likes the rhythm, don't you have a voice on the back of your head that tells you off? That says guilty pleasure? That tells you off for seeking dirty pleasures? Because today, the hindrance of kamachanda is slowly but surely being cast off by all of you. That is why you feel that way. Some of you have written in with your goals for the new year, and I have to say, I'm really impressed by how deeply you have analyzed the thoughts that come through your mind, that flow through your mind, and how deeply, how carefully you've managed to pick out some of the more complex situations, and how you've been able to identify certain defilements which only a trained mind would be able to identify. That is really quite impressive. But I'm sure as I say this, there will be newcomers to the sermon also. There will be the old timers. There will be the newcomers. There will be those still finding their feet. Right? There will be a mix. There may be even first timers. Someone sent you a link and you thought, what's this about? I've got to go listen to it. Maybe you're listening to this live. Maybe you're listening to the recording. 2 years from when the recording was done. Perhaps. Either way, there's always going to be a mix. And I have to speak to all of you, surely. So, it may be that among you, there are some for whom these experiences are unfortunately, very first-hand experiences, and that happen on a day-to-day basis. I'm trying to show you why did he talk about them as hindrances? Why did he categorize them as hindrances? What was it hindering? The five hindrances are called the five hindrances because they hinder Nibbana. That is why. And Kamachanda is the first of them. You'll have heard of all five of them, I'm sure. Kamachanda, Vyapada, Dinamidda, Uddaccha Kukkuccha, and Vichikiccha. So I'm talking about the first of the five. And I'm helping you identify where you may be with that hindrance. Have you perhaps cast it off? Or are you perhaps still trying to shake it off? Or perhaps it is today you're going to even identify that you still got it wound around you. So how do you identify? It is not when pleasure stops coming to you entirely. No. When pleasure stops coming to you entirely, when you stop experiencing pleasure entirely, then you would be identified as an arahant. But as a prutakjana, the hindrances hinder you from attaining nibbana because you don't identify them as hindrances. And you haven't seen that these problems exist in your mind. So if you're taking karma chanda, the first one, that is blindness to sensual indulgence, or blind sensual indulgence, then the word blindness in itself says a lot, doesn't it? When one is blind, they don't know what they're blind with. Because someone who's blind, if they knew they were blind, they would try to regain their sight, if possible. But if someone's blind and they don't know they're blind, which is the case in the case of Kamachanda, they are indulging in sensual pleasures and they don't know that, they don't know the reality of it. They don't know the reality of sensuality. They don't know the reality of pleasure. Unlike you, who today understand that pleasure is this relief from vexation, they don't understand that. So they seek infinite pleasures in sensuality. We were all there. We've all been there. Myself included. I've shared stories with you of how my friends and I used to prepare ourselves, right? We used to prep ourselves for a night in the buffet. Those days you say buffet and my mouth used to water. Today you say buffet, I think about the past and my eyes water. I remember how my friends and I would prepare ourselves for the buffet. Prepare ourselves how? Not ironing our clothes. No, not that stuff. Prepare our tummies for the buffet. Sometimes we'd starve ourselves. Sometimes a whole day. At least a couple of meals, at the very least. If we knew we were going out for dinner to a buffet, then usually nothing after 4 o'clock. That is 4 a.m. Nothing but water. Because we knew water is not going to do much damage. So nothing but water. No breakfast. No tea after breakfast. So we were almost living the life of ascetics. This was the Attakilamatana Yoga, which would come before the Kamasukallikana Yoga. Most certainly there wouldn't be lunch. And sometimes we used to justify telling ourselves, we are saving ourselves money. Why? One meal, we didn't have to pay for breakfast, didn't have to pay for lunch. So come evening, used to have the appetite of an elephant. I used to tell you this stuff, Rina. We used to walk into the buffet, into the restaurant, you know, like the Avengers walking into a scene. Like, or the Fantastic Four walking into a scene, and it's like, you know, we're gonna run this town tonight. That we're gonna get this place out of business. Now you guys are gonna have to feed us, because we've paid for it, right? However much it was, we've paid for it, and now you're gonna have to feed us, and we're gonna eat all of the food that you have here, right? We're not like the others, you know, the others who come in with a plate and then they serve themselves and they're full and they have to go. No, we're not like that. Because why? We've prepped ourselves. You don't know who you're messing with. So when the waiter would come up to us and say, "Welcome, sir, please would you like to take a seat there?" Like, we used to smirk at the guy. Like, today's the last day you're going to be in a job. Because like tomorrow your business is, you know, tonight your business is going to run out. You know, you're going to go bankrupt. Because we're going to eat all the food. And your boss is not going to have enough money to pay you tomorrow. And you're going to be out of a job. Loser. Today I realize how sympathetic he used to be to us. You know, when we walked in with such evil thoughts like, I'm going to get this guy out of a job. You know, he used to still tend to us. And, "Please, would you like to take a seat, sir? Can I get you some drinks?" I'm talking about indulgence in sensuality. You know, when we moved on from kids to teenagers to, you know, adults, and then we couldn't show off our mischief. The mind didn't get any more tame than it was as a young child, but at least as adults, we realize that, you know, we can't really say anything, everything that comes into our mouths. So, things used to come, but we used to keep quiet. And even as adults, we used to walk into a restaurant, into a buffet, and still we used to feel the same, but didn't say that to anyone. Certainly didn't say it out loud. Because we felt embarrassed. So we were there to indulge ourselves. I was not there because I was hungry. No, sorry, Bob. I was not there because I was hungry. I was there because I wanted to indulge myself. If you've had this experience, give me a show of hands. Have you, those of you who've prepped yourselves before you went into a buffet, right? Give me a show of hands. What about the rest of you liars? Right? Truth of the matter is, pretty much everyone has gone through this because, yeah, we're all the same model. We're all the same, make the same model. It's the way the mind works. Because ignorance and attachment are the same no matter where you look. Now, even if you and I are different, ignorance and attachment are still the same. It's the same coronavirus that infects everyone. Symptoms may be slightly different, but it's the same virus. So we've all been there, haven't we? That was a time we used to indulge in sensuality. That was proper indulgence. There was no rest for the five senses. If it is not one, it was the other, wasn't it? If it wasn't the tongue, it was the nose. If it wasn't the nose, it was the ears. If it wasn't the ears, it was the eyes. Constantly, constantly feeding the mind. This, can you imagine yourself with, you know, like with 5 vacuum cleaners plugged into you, and the bag on the inside, and you've got the pipes sticking, facing out, and these 5 vacuum cleaners, they get switched on from time to time. Like one's where your eyes are, the other is where your ears are, the other's inside your mouth, the other's just slightly above it. And what are they doing? They're sucking it all in. Feeding this insatiable mind. Indulgence. Indulgence in sensuality. It's a blocker to Nibbana. It's a hindrance to Nibbana. I'm trying to show you, today you are different. I like to think you're different today. I like to think that today, although you go through these experiences, your mind, at least the prajna or the wisdom in your mind, that mental faculty comes to the forefront. And while this experience of pleasure is going on, there's a voice in the back of your mind, isn't there, that says, how dare you, dirty thing? You dirty, dirty, dirty boy. Look at what you're doing. Look at what you're doing with your tongue. Is that what you're supposed to be doing? Look at what you're doing with your nose. Is that what you're supposed to be doing? Do you not realize that what you're doing right now is going to bind you to samsara and is not going to let you break free? Tell me, don't you have a voice like that at the back of your mind now? If you pick something up and you want to stick it to your nose, close to your nose, and you want to inhale it, and you know it's fragrant, yeah, even as you do it, isn't there a back of your voice that comes alive and says, oh, come on, what are you doing? Come on, stop it. What are you doing? And all the while, you're moving your hand, say it's a bottle of perfume or something, or a flower. You picked it up, and you're moving it to your nose. But isn't there a voice in the back of your mind that goes, what are you doing? Stop it. What are you doing? Stop it. What are you doing? And yet you'll bring it close to your nose. You will. You'll still do that. And then you'll take a deep breath in. And then you will most certainly feel the pressure. But isn't there a voice at the back of your mind going, you failed. Shame on you. You failed. I thought you were better than this. Isn't there a voice at the back of your mind that's doing this? This is what the famous psychologist Sigmund Freud used to call the superego. Now he saw the mind perform 3 functions. There was the id part. Right, those of you who've done any bit of psychology will remember this. There was the id part, right? And then there was the ego, and then there was the superego. This is how he saw the workings of the mind. He didn't think about ignorance and attachment. He didn't know any of that stuff. Shame, it would have done him a real deal of good had he got to listen to the Dhamma. Because he was very analytical. He used to analyze the world in very, I'd use the word weird. That is how some people saw it. He analyzed the world and the way people's behaviors, people's thoughts in very unusual ways. If you get a chance one day, read up his psychosexual analysis of how the mind works. Don't get carried away, just in case you're curious. I'm just thinking, you know, that's the kind of guy who I wish had got to listen to the Dhamma. His mind was always moving at a speed of 100 miles an hour, trying to find answers to problems, to real psychological issues that people had back in the day. So he used to call this part of the mind called the superego, which was hidden beneath the conscious part of the mind. So this is his take on the mind. You understand today that the Buddha's interpretation of the mind, but this was his take on it. But what I'm trying to show you was he identified also that there was a part of the mind which was the moral part of the mind. So you see that in some cartoons you have the angel on one side and the devil on the other side, and you're in the middle. So that's how he saw the mind work. So the you in the middle, that is what he saw as the ego. The devil was the id, and the angel was the super ego. The id part giving you the drive, the encouragement to go and engage in all the carnal desires of the mind. Now eat this, drink that, and go and sleep, and you know, have fun and indulge yourself and all that stuff. Whereas the superego going, no, hey, that's wrong. What are you doing? You are better than this. And then the middle id, the middle ego part, trying to balance these two voices. So of course, our interpretation of the mind in Buddhist philosophy is very different to that. You understand? But I'm saying this, you know, people used to think about this stuff in the past. Hence why I shared this story with you. But isn't there a voice in the back of your mind today as you pick up that fragrant object, flower, it may be, and you bring it to your nose? There's a voice at the back of your mind, is there not, that says, come on, what are you doing, come on. This is pointless. You know that this fragrance, this pleasant smell is simply relief from vexation. Come on, stop it, don't bring it to your nose. And yet your hand is moving to your nose. If you were to slow down time, isn't this what's going on? This moral battle? Or this mental battle? It's a moral dilemma. And then there's the other voice on your mind going, you know, come on, I'm not harming anyone. What's the problem? Just this time. How many times do you tell that to yourself? How many times do you buy that from your mind? Right? Just this time? Yeah, I'm talking to addicts also. As I said, there's a wide variety of people on this sermon. Right? So I'm talking to those of you to whom maybe you're still taming yourself. Good. We all started there. So I'm talking to the addicts in the room. There are all sorts of addictions people have, right? Some it's chocolate. Others it's smoking. For others it's the smell of something, a perfume. For others it's porn. How many times do you tell yourself, this is the last time? I'm not going to do it ever again, just this time. It's always just this time, isn't it? How many just this times have you been through? I'm just going to watch it this time, and I'm never going to watch it again. Ever. In that moment, do you not remember you promised yourself the same thing only 2 nights ago? No. Those memories don't come to you at that time. Why? Exactly. Blinded with sensual indulgence. This is Kama Chanda. All those promises to you, you made to yourself, right? All of that is forgotten. All those vows and all those pledges you took to keep away from those things, all of them are forgotten at that moment. And unfortunately, as the Buddha says, Natirago Samanagi, there is no fire that burns like the fire of desire. And sensuality is one aspect of desire. So when sensual desires appear in your mind, unless you have a great deal of willpower or a great deal of wisdom, there's usually no turning back. Yes or no? Count and tell me if you can. How many times have you told yourself, this is the last time? How many this is the last times have you had by now? Okay, not all your life. This year, this is the last time. How many years did you end? How many Decembers did you get through telling yourself, right, you know what, turn of the, this is a new year coming, right? Enough of the old stuff for last year. I'm not going to do any of this stuff in the new year. That's it, you know. I've got to move on. Last year went, new year came, and only a fortnight into it, and you were back in the old place. Yes or no? So must you stop trying? Of course not. That's the last thing you should be doing. I'm trying to show you the gravity of the problem. Kamachanda is the first Nivarana, the first of the 5 hindrances. You got to think why the Buddha put it first. Don't you think it has got to be the biggest hindrance of all? Because sensuality is a blindness, or at least indulgence, intoxication in sensuality. When that happens, folks, you're blind. It's like when you're in a dream, and when you don't know you're in a dream. That's what sensual indulgence is like. I'm sure you'll have seen people like that, and I'm also sure that you've been like that. There will have been times in your life where you were like that. You know, at a time when perhaps you're engaging in your primal instincts, I can't elaborate that any further. Okay? When you're engaged in satisfying your primal sensual desires, right? Would you ever be happy to record yourself and watch yourself? To see the way you acted? To watch a playback and see the things you did? Would you? How would you feel about yourself? Things that would, you know, normal, things would that would normally, for someone who is in their right mind, I'm not saying someone who's an arahant or, you know, just in the most common sense of the term, someone who's in their senses, who might find certain things disgusting, distasteful, unpleasant, in the height of sensual intoxication, they will find the same thing most satisfying, soul enriching. They'll even feel that this is the purpose I'm alive. I live and breathe for this. But each and every one of you can think of your own life experiences. Right? We have the five senses. So it's not just the one. We have five senses. And I'm talking about all five of them. So whichever sense has been the most offending in your life, then refer to that and think about that and contemplate on that. And think about how you might have been blinded. The question is, are you still? As I said, there will be some of you for whom the moment that the mind seeks or entertains a sensual pleasure, there is a voice at the back of your mind going, come on, come on, what are you doing? This is meaningless. This is senseless. Just put that back down. What are you doing? You already had something to eat. Let me go check with tummy. Tummy? Yes, tummy is full. Tummy doesn't need anything. Why did you open the fridge? No, why are you stretching your arm towards the chocolate? Let it go. You don't need that now. Besides, you promised yesterday that that was the last time you were going to have that chocolate. And there's Malli you have to leave some for also. He's coming tomorrow. If he comes here, you haven't left any for him. What are you doing? That's his half. Come on, you're better than this. And while all that is going on in the background, what have you done? Chocolate in hand. You're now on the sofa, very comfortably, snuggled up. And then while that voice is going on in the back of your mind, right, piece by piece, the bar of chocolate gets broken up and those pieces start moving towards your mouth. Are you telling me this doesn't happen at all? Are you and I a different species? You see, I learn from the best lab there is. What do you think that is? Well, the National Laboratory of Atomic Energy. Now, I learn from the best lab, and that is the lab of life. I don't let opportunities pass me by without making use of them. Every experience that I have had in my life, I use them to learn from them. I learn about myself from them. Today I'm able to talk about these things so freely with you because I am free from them. I could not talk to you about this with a guilty conscience. The things that used to haunt me, the things that used to keep me up at night, the things that used to steal my sleeping hours, I want to help you. Someone had written in recently saying they've got a habit of going on YouTube and listening to, well, watching music videos, and now it's become a habit. And they want to break free. YouTube, Facebook, and they've said that they, every time they meditate, they try to contemplate on the uselessness of this, and they're trying to put a lot of effort to try and overcome this. Do you know how much respect I have for people like you? How highly I regard people who are real warriors? And how little time I have for the all talkers and the no walkers? It is perhaps, you know, because that got shared with me recently. Someone had sent an email or something, I think, or a letter. And the question came through. They're trying to break this addiction. It's become a habit now. Sensual indulgence. That's why it can, sensual indulgence can ensnare any of the five senses. Because it is the mind that needs this. Yeah, the way I see it, the mind is like a pimp. And the five senses prostitutes. To the mind. It'll abuse the five senses in order to satisfy itself. Don't you feel sorry for your eyes? Perhaps today you're having to wear glasses because you've been staring at the screen for so long. Maybe you stare at the screen for so long because of your porn addiction. Is that the case? Is it? Maybe it's because you just couldn't put your phone down. You were ready for bed. Walked to your bed. Picked the phone up to set the alarm. The only thing you didn't set was the alarm. Do you not remember there was an email that had come through, or someone shared a story, a very personal story? I think I related this story to you. About a gentleman who was, if I remember right, was a university professor or lecturer. And he came in and talked about his porn addiction. You know, whether that's porn or whatever, at the end of the day, it's the mind that is trying to fulfill itself. At the end of the day, this is all sensual indulgence. So whether it's, you know, porn, which is condemned from a social standpoint in most cultures, or it's an unbreakable addiction to pizza. What's the difference? From the mind's perspective, what's the difference? You think you're such a good person because you don't have a porn addiction? But you have to have a pizza every week? With all the toppings? And a cheese crust? With an extra helping of mozzarella? And all the sauces to go on top? Isn't that food porn? Tell me then, you don't have a porn addiction. Where I said, anything that distorts the mind, anything that steals the mind's opportunity, anything that steals the mind's right to achieve fulfillment, satisfaction, and happiness, I see that as porn. And there are 5 sense doors through which it can come. So tell me, do you not have a porn addiction? When you indulge in sensuality, when you experience sensual pleasure, I'll cut you some slack if there's a voice at the back of your mind that says, what are you doing? How dare you? Didn't you promise Swami Nwanse that you were going to break this habit in the new year? What are you doing now? How many hours of meditation have you already spent on trying to break this habit? What are you doing now? Didn't Swami Nwanse speak about this in the sermon? What are you doing now? Can you walk up to your best friend or to your parents or to even Swami Nwanse and say that you have this habit? Are you really trying to do your best to break it? What are you doing? Why did you pick that up? Why did you switch on the computer? What is the need for it now? Why is your heart beating faster than normal? Why? Isn't this a guilty pleasure that you seek? How low of you. If you have that voice at the back of your mind and is based in the Dhamma, according to Mr. Freud, that could happen even without the Dhamma. You know, there are good people in this world. I'm talking about yourselves who listen to the Dhamma, and through the Dhamma, this analysis comes to the forefront, where you understand today that pleasure is simply relief from vexation. I don't think Freud knew that. But today you understand that pleasure is relief from vexation. So when pleasure is relief from vexation, if you have understood that, there has to be a voice in the back of your mind going, what are you doing? If you are vexed, this is not the right thing to be doing. Go and get help. Go speak to your parents. Go speak to your teacher. Go listen to that sermon. And then you will find the answer there. You don't have to be like this. And while that voice is in the background, If they're still, your other part, that keeps driving you to engage in that sensual activity. Now, the good thing is now, you're not blinded. And you're not blinded. And if you're not blinded, then you can see a path. If you're blinded, you can't see a path. And when you can't see a path, well, you've hit a dead end. Now, if you can't see a path out, you've hit a dead end, haven't you? So you've hit sensual pleasure and you've hit a dead end. Could it get any worse? Do you like the thought that your mind has employed 5 prostitutes? Do you like that thought? If someone comes and asks you, what do you do in your spare time? What might you have to say in response to that question? What do you do in your spare time? Can you genuinely answer that question with a straight face? I seek the services of a prostitute. Please don't say that to anyone. But isn't that how you ought to feel? Then get off your moral high horse. And let's get down to business. Because there's a demon to tame. Can't you see? Your mind is your best friend, but your mind can also be your worst enemy. An untamed mind is reckless. There's nothing as dangerous as an untamed mind. Nothing. An atom bomb is a play toy compared to an untamed mind. So I'm today talking to you about when the mind seeks sensual pleasures, does it still go into indulgence mode? Does it still get intoxicated? Does it get drunk? In sensual pleasure. And lose its bearings completely. I hate to ask this question, but I'll ask you nevertheless. Was there ever a time you forgot your mother was your mother? Oh, that's really low, Swami, no answer. You shouldn't have asked that question. Well, you shouldn't have done that then, should you? Tell me these things don't happen in the world, and that this is all just a figment of my imagination, right? And I'm just hallucinating here, and I'll stop. But what do the papers say? What is it? What does the news say? What does Facebook say? Has there ever been a time you forgot your mother was your mother? You know what I mean by that. Has there ever been a time you forgot your father's your father? Or what about that time you forgot that your daughter was your daughter? You know I don't mean you forgot her name. What about that time you forgot your brother was your brother, or your sister was your sister? You are in your senses. You are in a sound mind. You were? Kamachanda. When the mind is intoxicated. When the mind is intoxicated, the mind doesn't know what it's doing. But if there's a voice in the back of your mind that has understood the Dhamma, that understands that vexation and the relief from it is pleasure and nothing else, the value that it attributes to pleasure goes for a free fall. And every experience of pleasure is condemned. Every experience of pleasure is seen as an insult to oneself. Every experience of pleasure is seen as an insult to one's teacher. The Buddha even. When you're has there never been a time you've indulged in some sort of sensuality, some sort of sensual activity, and then you were reminded of the Buddha? And then you thought to yourself, good heavens. If only the Buddha was around today, how might he address me? Never happened? When the mind is intoxicated with sensual pleasure, or with sensual indulgence, there are no bounds. There are no barriers. There are no limits. This is all I'll do and nothing more. Usually there are no limits. The mind will go as far as it can to satisfy itself. You see, herein lies the problem. Indulging in sensuality, as the Buddha said, is a fire. And it's a wildfire. A wildfire, once it's ablaze, if it's not put out artificially, it'll keep burning until. It'll keep burning until everything in its path has been burned to dust. That's when it stops. Not very long ago, we saw some wildfires. Right? In various parts of the globe. Right? And if you ever saw them on news or some other media, you'll have seen how the firefighters try their very best to put those fires out. excuse me, sometimes they'll go drop water from helicopters to try and put the fire out. The reason they have to do that is because the fire knows no limits. Anything in its path, it'll burn. It'll burn to dust. It'll only exhaust itself once anything that is flammable has been burnt. And the Buddha says, Natti rago samannaggi. Desire, particularly this aspect of it, sensual indulgence, is like that fire. It'll keep on burning. It'll keep on burning until everything within reach has been consumed. So, does it surprise you now then I have to ask you, was there a time you forgot your mother was your mother? You wouldn't do it when you're in your senses. Of course not. Because then it's not Kama Chanda. Kama Chanda is when you're blind. Oh, of course, you will regret intensely once you come back to your senses. But then it'll be too late. There will be a time when you regain your consciousness, or rather your conscience, your power of thought, your ability to see right from wrong. All these faculties will start to drop and you'll start to lose them one by one. Right? On your path to this intoxication, these powers of thinking, the power of thought, the power of reasoning, the power of logic, the power of rationalizing things, the power of distinguishing good and bad, all these faculties start to drop one after the other. And then at one point, you're just an animal. Please understand, I'm not saying you're an animal. What I'm trying to explain to you is the state of the mind, not you as in you. I'm talking about the state of the mind when it becomes intoxicated. In sensual indulgence. As all the faculties and all that power to distinguish right from wrong, and all those faculties are now lost. Now you're just a machine. A machine that is powered by the fuel of desire. A machine that will stop at no cost, that will stop at no expense to satisfy an unsatiable, or rather an insatiable mind. Here's the problem. The mind cannot be satisfied. Long time ago, I used to have a friend who said his philosophy of life was to indulge in every sensual desire that he can think of, so that one day he's going to have enough. One day he's going to feel, you know what, that's it, right? I've had my fill. I no longer need any amount of sensual satisfactions or pleasures. I'm content now. And then he's going to become celibate, and he's going to lead the life of a holy person. So that was his philosophy. Tried to explain to the guy a few times, and then I gave up. He didn't want to listen. Why? Because he was blind. When you're blind, you're blind. That's it. There's no semi-blind. You're blind. You're blind. So when a guy says, think about a person like that. I mean, I'm talking about a really educated person, someone who used to work with me. Well-educated, well-to-do, right? Top brains, I'm talking about. High IQs. Those are the kind of people I got to work with. Right? Super intelligent people. And this guy's philosophy is, satisfaction can only be achieved once you've done the lot. Once you've gone through everything and you've ticked all the boxes, right? And you've left no stone unturned in your search for pleasure. He said, you have to go through this experience. He said, I don't want to die, he said, folks. He said, I don't want to die. Right? Regretting. Oh, but alas, there was this one thing I couldn't do to satisfy myself. So there are people like that out there. I'm only hoping one day he gets to listen to this sermon. I tried back then, it didn't work. If the mind could be satisfied by seeking, by providing sensual pleasures, wouldn't the Buddha have gone down that path? Didn't the Buddha try that as a bodhisattva? Did he not talk about the useless, fruitless, essenceless nature of kamasukallikana yoga, the indulgence of sensual pleasures? But when one is blind, what choice has he got? That is why you have to try everything you can do to stop becoming blind or getting sight of the Dhamma. That happens when you listen to the Dhamma. Hopefully for some of you, that day is today. Where you listen to the sermon, you're paying attention to this, and you really start to go deep down inside into the ugly, dark, secret corners of your mind that have never been shown to anyone. No one's ever been down there. No one has ever not a modicum of detail has ever been shared with anyone about those dirty, dark secrets. But you know they're there. Your self-consciousness cannot be fooled. So you know they exist. Perhaps today is the day when you get to clean them out. Perhaps today is the day you get to dig deep and pull them out by their roots and really free yourself. That is the purpose of all this, to free yourself. Honestly answer this question. Whenever you have had this urge to satisfy your sensual desires, was that a time you felt free? Right? A time when you felt the urge to satisfy yourself. Was that a time you felt free? Was that a time you felt that there was no worry in the world for you? You felt like you were floating in the air and walking among the clouds. Was that a time you felt like that? Or was that a time when you felt a sensation of burning inside of you? Wasn't that a time where you felt the insides of you cringing, yearning, pleading, begging to be satisfied? And most of the time, those were things that had to be done in secret. Because most of the time, civilized society would not condone it. Civilized society would find that sort of thing embarrassing. At best case, they'd say, these are things that have to be done behind closed doors. Go get a room, dude. At best case, they would have said that. At worst case, they would probably spat in your face. If not literally, figuratively. Right, so how many of you are still trying to break those habits? If you're trying to break those habits, guys, hats off. I respect you. Right, my respect goes out to two people. One, those who have managed to become successful. What? Meaning I have a lot of money? No. Money does not earn respect from me. Wealth and power, authority, none of these things earn our respect. What earns our respect? It's effort, right effort, willpower, strength of courage, strength of character, courage and the willpower and determination and resolve, persistence to try and fight the defilements. Those who have become victorious in that fight, hats off to you. And those who are genuinely doing that fight, it may be that you have cuts all over yourself, bruises, but you're fighting. You're fighting. You're a warrior. Hats off to you as well. Both these kind of people, I always have a lot of respect for them. Always. Always will have. Always have had. Have today and always will have. So if you want to earn my respect, there's only one way you can do that. You either have to fight or you will have to have won. Those who have won, they have my respect. Those who are fighting, they have not only my respect, but my help. There'll be the young, there'll be the middle-aged, there'll be the elderly listening to this sermon. Today, tomorrow, in a week's time, 6 months' time, 6 years, 60 years' time, 600 years' time. Because everyone starts somewhere. So it would not be fair for someone to say, why is Vaminasa talking about this stuff? You know, it's like, that was donkey's years. I've moved on. I don't have any of these problems. Do you not remember? You had a time when this was a problem for you. Only 2 years ago. So that's when you started walking the path. And it took you 2 years to fix that issue. 2 years after you, someone has started on the journey. Who's going to talk to them? Because even tonight, this night, some guy is going to go to bed with a phone in his hand. He'll pick it up to set the alarm. That's the last thing he'll be doing. He'll set everything but the alarm. What he'll be doing is he'll setting a time bomb within himself. Even this night, tonight, some guy will set out his home. He'll set out from his home to walk the streets, looking for someone to please him. He set out with his prostitutes. He's gone out looking for a prostitute. Even this night, tonight, someone will be playing hide and seek. with their computers. Incognito modes will be firing up. Private browsing modes will be firing up. Windows will be opened, minimized. On-off buttons of screens will be only a tap away. Homework will be open on screen. Because mother never says, minimize that, I want to see what's behind that. Unfortunately, mother never says that. Let me emphasize, unfortunately, mother never says that. So mothers, what am I implying here? You didn't catch me? Let me say that again. Unfortunately, mother never says that. Mother never says what? Unfortunately. Minimize that screen. I want to see what's behind it. And then the son goes, or the child goes, you distrust me. You think I'm doing something bad, pretending to do my homework. You think I'm like that? Don't fall for that. Oh, they'll say all sorts. How dare you? How can you think about me like that? You don't trust me. You are always like that. Can I tell you something? Save them. They don't know they need to be saved. Save them. Go ahead. Get them to minimize that screen. But isn't that showing, Swaminas, that we don't trust them? How naive. You had a childhood, didn't you? Whatever tricks you played on your parents is the same stuff your kids are going to play on you. So go ahead. Yes, minimize that. Not because I don't trust you. I don't trust. Ignorance and attachment. I don't trust them to leave you alone. Now it may be that they get into a fit of rage. Well, if you don't find something bad behind the screen, well, at least now you found that they've got a fit of rage to deal with. That you need to help with, don't you, Julie? If a guy hasn't done anything wrong and someone accuses him and a guy gets angry, isn't there something wrong with him? So weren't you right to accuse him in the first place? What's his fault? Well, he gets angry when he's accused of something he hasn't done. Is that not a defilement? Answer, is that not a defilement? When you're accused of something you haven't done, and you get angry, you get peeved off, is that not a defilement? Name the Arahant who is chief among those who get angry when accused of something they haven't done. Venerable who? Who did the Buddha name was foremost among the bhikkhus? Who would get angry whenever accused of something they hadn't done? Their character was so clean and pure that if ever they got accused of something they hadn't done, oh boy, they'd tear you a new page. So even if you don't find anything behind that screen, and they get angry, have you not found something? Have you not found another problem with them? So it's not their loss, is it? They've gained something. I'm telling you, folks. You know, have that sort of environment at home where you can question everything your children do. Parents, right? If that's not the culture you have at home, for their sake, for your children's sake, get that culture in place at home. I don't care which part of the world you live in. Get that culture in place at home for their sake. If you care for your children, if you love your children, if you want the best for them, right? Don't let them have that culture at home where parents cannot question me. But what about children's rights, Swami Mahansa? Don't they have a right to privacy? Well, if you ask me that question, I'll tell you, well, yes, they also have a right to go to the hells. Don't they? So don't take away their rights from them. They have every right to be born a dog in the next birth. They have every right to call a female dog their mother in the next birth. And if you don't do anything to stop that, that'll probably be you. So have that culture at home. Build that sort of culture at home. That's the kind of environment you need to have in a happy home. That's the kind of environment you have. Parents should be able to question everything. Everything. You should be able to walk up to your kids' bedroom. You don't have to knock. Come on. You're the parents. Why do you have to knock? There may be some, you know, young adults or teenagers listening to this sermon going, Swami Mahansa has gone mad. What's he saying? I have a right to my privacy. Do you not have a right to be protected from everything that is evil? Do you not have a right to see the truth? Do you not have a right to be freed? This is why I asked you, when you have those urges that surface from the deep down dark places of your heart, when they surface, are you telling me you're free? Are you telling me you feel cool? Or is that simply an unquenchable, insatiable, niggling, cringing, burning, so unpleasant? Void. That is like a fish out of water, gasping for air. Isn't that how you feel in those times? Why don't you allow yourself to be freed? Children, why don't you allow yourself to be freed? You know, your parents can only do that. Most places, your parents can only do that until you hit 18. Some places 16, and after that, you know, if they don't knock before they enter, then that's the last door they'll be knocking. Then they'll be knocking the inside of a jail cell, saying, "Let me out. I only try to do the best for my children." So advanced the human species are now, aren't they? You know, parents can't question children. Because they have to respect their rights. Parents can't enter a room without knocking on the door because it's seen as infringing on their in the personal space. Well, where was the personal space when you were in the mother's womb? What space did you give your mother? How much space did you give your mother when you were in her womb? How much space did you give your mother when you were suckling on her breast? Where was the personal space then? Where was her privacy then? Where did you come out of? Where was her privacy then? I haven't lost my temper. I'm just talking to you in a way that hopefully makes sense and puts some sense back into people's minds that seem to have lost every sense. When your father had to go through all those sleepless nights trying to put you to sleep, rocking you until you fell asleep, where was his personal space? Where was his privacy? Right? Your mother and father couldn't even cuddle each other when you were around. So what about their privacy? I don't get it. What... Give me privacy, parents, for children to be... What right is that? I'm not being contemptuous of any, you know, civil laws or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, if you want to bring up your children in, you know, to bring them up to be respectful, good children who are able to seek the purpose and achieve the purpose of them coming to the world in the first place. If you want to bring them up as righteous children and citizens into a world in which they can one day earn respect from others, and more than anything, feel respect for themselves. I feel all this you know, parents have to respect children's privacy. Also, I feel all that is nonsense. Yeah, I'm not saying walk into the washroom and when they're in there. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying, you know, if they're in the living room, if they're in their bedroom, I'm working on the computer. Why does a mother have to seek a child's permission to check his browsing history? What's that all about? Why is she doing it in the first place? To skin him alive? Of course, the parent has to be responsible, and the parent has to be able to control, be in control of their own feelings, and be able to handle situations in a very decent and in a very controlled manner. But that is why you have to be based in the Dhamma and well placed and well versed in the Dhamma before you try and tackle your children, right? But provided you're capable of that. I only see losses and no gains in trying to lay down artificial barriers between children and parents. So I'm not for that. But hey, if everything I wanted would happen in this world, eh? But I can still talk to you. I can talk sense into you. I'm asking you to think about these things. Right? Because when the mind is intoxicated, when the mind is blinded with sensual indulgence, there is no breaking free. And as the Buddha says, Natti Rago Samannagi, this is a wildfire, and it will not stop until it has exhausted everything. You know, parents, answer this question for me. Okay? You want to respect your son's privacy. Until when? You walk into the room and you find your son and daughter in bed together. Is that when you're going to learn your lesson? Tell me these kind of things don't happen and I will rewind the tape. Tell me everything I see in the papers, right? Everything that happens around the world and they get reported in the news, in the papers, right? Tell me all of these things are fake. What will you have to say for yourself then? Parents of today think they know the internet. You think you know the internet? Ask your 6-year-old, he'll tell you what the internet is. Every fantasy catered for. And new fantasies waiting for. All it takes is a click. Remember, behind all actions is simply a drishti. Nothing is so powerful as a drishti. It's simply an idea. That's all it is. It's just an idea. It's not heavy. It doesn't have to be delivered nicely packed in a parcel. It's simply an idea. It's simply a smile on a face or a thumbs up. If 600 people have commented on the same thing saying, wow, that was awesome, that was nice, whoa, that is very... entertaining. I'm mindful there are young children on the audio. That's why, you know, sometimes I can't say everything I want to say. But then if I don't say what I have to say, who's going to say it to you? There's everything on the internet. Everything. Everything's on the internet. That's where everything is. If ever you lose something and you want to find it, look it on the internet. It'll be there. What's the internet? It's where everything is. Where's everything? Oh, they're on the internet. Whatever floats your boat, whether it's mother and son, or father and daughter. Yes, yes, going on a picnic. Whether it's grandmother and grandson, brother and sister, niece and nephew. Oh, there's more. Student and teacher. Oh, what about the guy who goes into the church with a nun? He's going to make his confessions. Nothing is so powerful as a drishti. It's just an idea. That is why it's so dangerous. To drop the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they had to fly for almost a day. Because those things were heavy. And those things had to be dropped from a great height. And it took a lot of energy to lift the thing up. So it could be dropped and create that havoc of that much of a destruction. But a drishti, an idea, simple. All you need is a smile on a face. All you need is someone going, yummy. That's enough. All you need is someone to put a little image on a web page to say, click here. And your every desire will be fulfilled. You haven't lived until you've seen this. Eyes that haven't seen this, ears that haven't heard this, aren't worth it. See, these are just words, right? See how easily I said them out to you? It's just an idea. See how easy it is to indoctrinate someone? Now think about a time when your kid, he or she had a tough time at school. Exams failed, or exams looming and haven't done their studying and feeling tensed, feeling pressured. Now lots of vexation built up on the inside. He's feeling so tensed, or perhaps he's just gotten the boot. Girlfriend's dumped him. Now, or friend has just said something and they've fallen out. Now? Or got caught doing something mischievous and dad has just told him off. Now? Now there's a very, very tangible pressure and displeasure that he's got to deal with. It's very real. So then he walks in, sits in front of his computer, switches the thing on, fires up the browser. Oh, and what about all those spam emails? Look in your spam box once in a while. See what you have in there. What do they all talk about? Feeding the homeless, right? Or is it helping the needy? What do they have? Every email box has a spam box in there. And in every spam box, right, go in and have a look. Right, get your kid to open up his email one day and just go and look in the spam box to see what he has. Right, once in a while, he's gonna dip in there. And when he needs to see a dip, takes a dip in there, what's he going to see? I don't want to say these things out loud on the sermon, so I won't. Because I just can't. Go and have a look for yourself. Now he has a look in there and he reads the description. He reads the subject of their email. And he goes, whoa. Someone wants to have something with me tonight. Dinner. Of course. How tempting. And apparently she's from Russia and only 22 years of age. And she's single. And apparently she's also got horns. That's where the adjective comes from, right? So you click on the email, and then there's a link. You just have to click on this link, and she'll be with you in just a matter of time. And you can get the address of where to find her, and her number, and everything. So they click on the link. And where does that take them? It was only an innocent email, wasn't it? You got that email for them so that they could submit their college homework. Because they had to submit their college homework by email, so you had to get in that email. And so you did. Like any good parent would do. But now, you don't have what it takes to go and ask him, let me check your emails. Because what have you trained him to, what have you allowed him to grow up to be? When you say, let me check your emails, Putha. How dare you? My emails are my emails and that's private. Mommy, go wash your mouth. How could you even ask me something like that? Is that the culture you have now built up at home? I tell you, folks, if you can't look after your children, bring them here. We look after them. Because here, there's nothing we can't ask. And there's nothing we don't ask. Why? That's because we care. Every young Samanera monk has a teacher. And the teachers are allowed to ask anything they like. And if anything has to be checked, they have to be presented on demand. Why? Because we care. But if that's not the culture at home, how about you bring your kids and hand them over to us? Because you don't seem to have the guts to be a parent. I'm saying change that culture. It's enough, right? Because you better start, get it done by the age they're 12 or 13. After that, it'd be a dream. Once they've passed 12, 13, right, they move into adolescence. That's it. Right, everything that they read, everything that they learn, all those indoctrinations will be, you are now young adults, and adults have what? Adults have rights. And you have a right to privacy, right? You have a right to personal space, right? Not even your parents can encroach your personal space, right? They can't ask you certain questions, right? Like the Buddha said, you know, don't ask certain questions, like, so they get, these are the questions that you shouldn't ask. To all the parents listening to this sermon, I ask you, can you go and check your kids' internet browsing today? Not like making an appointment with him. I put on like, next week, do you mind if I check your internet? Yeah, sure, Ami. Yeah, I'll have it ready for you. No, I'm talking about on-the-spot checks. But you walk into the kid's bedroom, move. Now he sat at the computer, move. When? Now. Move. She didn't even say, please. Well, yes, that's because I'm your mother. Move. Right, now sit there and ask, how do you check the internet? That's the problem. You can't keep up with them. But how do I check your browsing history? You just open up Notepad, dummy. That's how you do it. See, it's empty, see? It's empty, it's blank, see? It's even called untitled. Good son. If you give your children weapons, you have a duty to teach them how to use them. If you don't, they're going to slice their throats with them. They're going to slit their throats with them. And those of others. Because when they become intoxicated with sensual indulgence, when Kamachanda kicks in, I tell you folks, they will forget that you are their mother. Wasn't very long ago, was it, that Guru Swami Mahanse related a story to us? A true story? Of how a young son, another 16 or 17 years of age, father left mother and son and went abroad to earn for them. And this child, after a while, started to be ever so nice to his mother. And every night he used to bring her a glass of orange juice. Did I say grass? That's what he should have brought. Every night, a glass of orange juice. And the mother was so happy about it because every time she drank this orange juice, she could sleep peacefully. Some months later, the mother got pregnant. That's what I'm saying. Tell me these things don't happen and I won't say a word. I'll swallow every word I've said. And we can pretend this day never happened. Mother got pregnant. Father got news that his wife is pregnant, and he's scratching his head wondering, how the hell can that happen? And he thought, she's been unfaithful. He came back. Had a go at the woman. And she pleaded her innocence. He said, my dear husband, I have never been unfaithful to you. I swear to you, I've never been unfaithful to you. Please believe me. But she was carrying a baby in her womb. So how could he believe her? They went to the doctor. Got a DNA check. Turns out, if you can promise me you've got fingers in your kid's ears, I can tell you the rest. But hey, turns out, yes. Turns out. Would you believe me now that when sensual indulgence comes in and you become blinded, when it gets so intense that right and wrong, good and bad, sense, logic, reason, all of these things start to fall apart. And you just become an insatiable machine for sensual pleasure or for sensual desire. A machine that is insatiable for sensual desire. There are other ways I'd like to describe this machine, but I have to refrain from that. Because I can't see you, I don't know who's listening to the sermons. Not because of fear, but I don't want to say too much. Then you will forget your mother is your mother. You will forget your sister is your sister. You will forget your father is your father and that your son is your son. You'll forget your teacher is your teacher. You'll forget your student is your student. The only refuge is the Dhamma. How does the Dhamma come to refuge? Come to be the only refuge? By learning that pleasure is simply a relief from vexation. This is simply suffering. When it is proved to the mind that this is suffering, the mind does not linger another moment. The reason that the mind could get so warped, so distorted, so out of order, that it forgot or it couldn't see the mother as mother, was because the mind wanted to escape from suffering. and it took the only path it knew. Isn't that proof that when the mind sees suffering, whatever suffering the mind knows, it may have misunderstood, but if it sees suffering, it will do whatever it takes to escape from it. And then, whether it's mother, father, brother, sister, matters not. So, what if you showed the mind what true suffering was? That is why you can't stop a sotapanna. They become an unstoppable machine that gets to Nibbana. I don't know why I felt like talking about this today, but that's what came out of me. I wanted to continue the conversation from last week. It's with that intention I sat down and started talk, and lo and behold, it's completely something else. Why? I think only you know that. Someone among you is very lucky today. Someone among you needed to hear these words today. Is that you? Don't worry about what we talked about last week. We'll continue next week. Don't worry. These are some of the burning problems that you suffer from. That I know. Alright, we can talk about the Dhamma, we'll talk about Paticchasamuppada and the Four Noble Truths, and yeah, of course, those are the answers. But in the meantime, it's as important to make you realize the gravity of the problem. Otherwise, it's easy for one to think, listen to the Dhamma sermon or go shopping today. Which one's the bigger problem? Chances are, for people who haven't taken some time to think things through, they're going to think going to the supermarket is a bigger problem because otherwise you'll be hungry. You know, the burning inside, it's intolerable. Whereas the Dhamma, I mean, that's just some stuff, right? You can listen to that anytime. But hunger? No, that's a proper fire. That's a proper burning, that is. Got to sort that out first. People will feel that way. Dhamma sermon or party? If I don't go to the party, then my friends are not going to be happy about that. And then, I'm going to have to lose a friend. Terrible, 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 terrible. But if I don't listen to the sermon, it's just another sermon. There's one of those every week. Don't have a party every week. It's not like my friend's going to turn 25 again. I don't know. For some reason, this is what you got me to say. Someone needed it. So, if you needed it, you got it. Now make use of it. Whether you needed it or not, I tell you folks, if you're parents, please rethink your parenting strategy. I invite you to do that. Please rethink your parenting strategy. Why you would feel that you can't go and question your children and their browsing habits, or why you can't open their school bags and check what they've got inside, right? Or I mean, the prefects do it at school, and they didn't even give birth to them. Or why you can't open their wardrobes and look in their drawers? How they live in your home. You bought them that chest of drawers. So who took away your right to check it? And why do they have that folder on the computer that says, that's got a password on it? Why is it encrypted? It's only you, your husband, and your son who use the computer. So who's going to go into it, and what's the problem that they have with that? Why do they have that folder with the password lock on it? Oh, no, those are things we don't talk about at home, Swami Nahan said. Fine, then bring the kid here. We'll ask the question. And send the computer with them. And we can teach the kid how to actually use a computer properly. You seem to have failed to do that. Don't settle for that nonsense. Right? When a kid can pay his own school fees, right? Then tell him, right, you can go and learn about your rights at school and how parents have to keep their distance from their children. Right? Let them pay their own school fees for that. Right? When they can earn their own living, when they can pay their own rent. Right? Your home, your rules. I know I'm not going to be a fan of kids from this day forward, but that's fine, that's fine. That's why I've been preparing Dharamdasa Andhru and Garamaga Andhru and Sudasi Andhru and so on to talk with the kids. In future, I'm going to become even less popular. I'm not going to stand for this nonsense. Parents should be able to question absolutely everything. But let me remind you, parents, that you also have a duty. You have a duty to ensure that you're ready for the interview, that you're ready to ask those questions. That you have a good state of mind, you have an understanding of the Dhamma, your purpose and your intent is clear, and it is only 100% for the benefit of the child. I can't think of why you would be anywhere else, but I don't trust ignorance and attachment one bit. So, if you have more ignorance and attachment than your children, then it can be in some cases. I know some parents, right? They'll get their children to sit down and listen to the sermon. Putha, listen to the sermon today. Because you have listened to the sermons, no? The kids have listened to the sermon. The parents are busy watching TV. Because they want their children to be good children. Unfortunately, I do know some parents who are like that. They have to listen to the sermons, they have to do the Buddha Puja, they have to go to the temple, they have to observe still. But parents, no. Parents sit themselves in front of the TV, wasting their life away. And what an example they're setting them, so for their children. So if you're a parent like that, then I would question your suitability to go and address your child in that manner, because you're not fit enough for that. You have to, just because you gave birth to your child, just because you fed your child, doesn't mean you are mentally prepared to handle their problems. For that, you have to prepare yourself. You have to reinforce yourselves with the Dhamma. You have to be able to take away the patient from the disease and treat the illness, not the patient. You have to be able to make problems objective rather than subjective. You can't take your own vexations out on your kids. Have I won a few of you back always yet? The answer with the children. You can't just whack your kids just for the fun of it. They're not whacking things. Right? So you have a duty, don't forget that. Just like a teacher. Right? A teacher has a duty to continue to study. If a teacher insists that their students should study and prepare themselves, right, and be studious and diligent with their work and so on, right? The teacher should be 10 times that, at least. So if you insist your children to listen to the sermons, right, please don't think that the sermons are some things, it's like a nursery for your children to become better children. Do remember that it's the same Dhamma for everyone. After all, we are in the business of treating the mind and trying to rid the mind of ignorance and attachment. Whether you're a parent or your child, ignorance and attachment are your problems. So make sure that you are ready and prepared. Because, when you ask your kid to minimize that window and you see what's on the browser behind you, what if you fall unconscious? It shocks you and you get a heart attack. Now there's a bigger problem. You should be able to handle that. You should be able to take that in and have a decent conversation with your kid. Right, Buddha, let's have a chat. We need to talk. If you start to cry or just break up in front of your kid and say, "Oh, I can't bear this. I can't. Oh my God, you see this? How can you do this?" That is not helpful. That's not productive. Because the kid's already suffering from a problem. You can't be a burden on him. The kid's already got a problem. You've got to help him. So make sure you're ready for that. Parents, make sure you're ready to find out one day that your kid's gay. What? Yes, I said that. Yes. Make sure you're ready one day to find out that your child is homosexual. And talk to him. Just the same way to find out that your child is heterosexual and talk to him. Well, you thought I was going to say that homosexual is bad and heterosexual is good? No, anything with that sexual bit, anything with that is wrong. Not wrong as in worldly considered wrong, but on the path to Nibbana, all of those things are things that have to be cast off eventually. If you ask me, is it liking apples or oranges, which is worse of the two? Well, attachment brings suffering, that's it. Matters not whether you're attached to a boy or a girl. Attachment brings suffering. Full stop. Be prepared to find out that your kid's addicted to porn. Be prepared to predict that your kid's got a drug problem. Prepare yourself. A couple of weeks ago, I remind you, prepare yourself to say goodbye to your kid for the last time. This is worse. Because with the previous problem, you can't fix it. Now, if your kid's gone, right? You can't fix that. You only have to fix yourself. But if you find out your kid's got a drug problem, now, not only have you got to maintain a sane mind and make sure you're composed, you've also got to fix your kid. So which one is more heavy lifting? Make sure you're prepared to find out your kid's got a crush on his sister. Or his teacher. Prepare yourself. No, not with a rehearsal. Prepare yourself with the Dhamma. Think things through. How might I respond to that? How am I ready for that? You can't faint at the news. Because that's the last time your kid's going to come and tell you anything. You can't be hypersensitive. You've got to be able to work through the problem objectively. Because that's how you would if you were to, you know, find out that some other kid has that problem, right? On the newspaper you see a boy's run away with a girl and you'll say, you know, look at kids these days, no? And then you find out your kids run away with someone and you faint. Don't you see there's a problem? That's what I'm saying. You know, prepare yourself. Just as we do at the monastery. Our teachers are pushed harder than students. Because we need to arm ourselves faster, stronger than our pupils, our students. Because when they have a problem, we need to help ourselves and help them at the same time. Who's got to be the stronger one? Guy's trying to help another guy out of a pit. Who's got to be stronger? The guy in the pit, he's only going to have to carry his own weight. The guy on the outside, he's got to ensure he carries the other guy's weight and also make sure that he doesn't fall into the pit. So teachers have always got to be stronger than their pupils. More prepared. Now what about parents then? Are you weaker than your kid? Mentally? I give you a challenge. Don't let your kid see you crying. Anytime. If you must cry, don't let your kid see you crying. Because then they think, okay, crying is the solution to problems. If you have to cry, then it's because you haven't understood the Dhamma yet. Right? Don't let your kids see you getting angry. If you have to get angry, then lock yourself in the bathroom and, you know, get all the angrier you want and then come out cool as a cucumber. But don't get angry in front of your kids. Don't use swear words in front of your kids. Don't lose your temper in front of your kids. You can't be weak in front of your kids. Otherwise, who are they going to hold as their role models? And the same thing goes for sensual indulgences. I'd say, don't let your kids see you indulging yourself in sensual pleasures. Because they'll think that's the right answer. to the problem. With every step you take, you're setting an example to them. So you've got to be careful. Okay, so think about some of the things you've heard today in the sermon. As I said, not sure why these things came out of me, but perhaps there's someone who needed to hear it. Is that you? Let me rephrase that question. Isn't that you? The Dhamma is the only refuge. Because the Dhamma will open your eyes. And then you'll be able to see clearly. And then you won't become blind to indulgences. Sensuality will no longer blind you. You'll be able to see right from wrong. So work towards that. Okay, let's transfer the merits and bring the sermon to a close. Let's take a moment then to transfer the merits that we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirit, listening to the Dhamma and engaging in the various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves of how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching, and with immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down to the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand, and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us transfer the merits we have acquired to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to Guru Swami Mahansa and all the other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. And may through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May through the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, and medicines, as well as those of you who have passed on and continue to pass on your know-how and extend your well wishes. May through the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds and fulfill the meritorious deeds and fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path and attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our parents, our spouses, siblings, children, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, and so on and so forth, as well as our elders and friends and acquaintances, employers and employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us. In any way, shape, or form, by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the Devas and Brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protecting and fulfilling the samples of the Shasana. Let us also transfer merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way, and may through the power of these merits they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all who have been our families, friends and acquaintances, in this infinitely long journey in samsara, who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in every way they could. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to them. Let us also transfer merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives and continue to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all who have lost their lives in the war, be their friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired today. Let us also transfer merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, including the prevailing pandemic, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara, teachers and as well as others who have helped us, supported us, assisted us. Let us take a moment to transfer merits to them. May through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in woeful planes, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Finally, let us all resolve that may through the power of the blessings of all the merits that we have acquired today, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahats and mahanses on this blessed land. And finally, may through the power of all the merits we have acquired today, you and I and everyone who has helped make this program a success, become an arahat and mahanse or an arahat mehen mahanse in this very life and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. And we will now conclude the session.